you're a survivor? What? Bro, are you listening to Survivor? Guys, I think this is Survivor. Dude, you must really like Survivor.
Hello, Survivor fans, and welcome to another episode of Buffs, Blindsides, and Banter podcast, the podcast made by superfans with superfans for superfans. Today, I'm your host, Mac, and as you can tell, our usual host, Buckles, is not here. He's decided to have a week off, and I know what you're thinking. Why would he need a week off? And don't worry, I'm thinking the exact same thing. He doesn't work hard enough, but he's up in Brisbane for the finale viewing party, which is on Tuesday, so good on you, Buckles, when you listen to this. I'm carrying the flag here again, as usual. Mac doesn't stop working, but that's what I do. But in his place today, I have a great guest we have. I met this person maybe like three, 4 years ago. We played an online game of Survivor called OSM, Online Survivor Madness, season maybe six, I think it was. And we were like tightest alliance in the game until he stabbed me in the back. He went on to win that season and on Bigger and Better Things, Canberra Survivor Season 2. He's the Rob God. He came fourth in that season, played a masterful game, almost won the game. He is Michael Prionis. Michael, how are you going?
I'm going good, thanks, Mac. How are you?
Mate, that knife's still on my back from those years ago when you stabbed me, but I'm okay.
I had to do it then. If I didn't do it then you would have turned everyone on me and then you would have made it to the end and done what I did. So you were too big of a threat, mate.
That's fine. You can boost my ego by saying that, but
too charming.
You outplayed me, clearly. We all know that. And you deserve the win in that game. Very well done.
Thank you.
Since then, Camper Survivor, that must have been great for you.
Yeah, absolutely amazing experience. So my first full-length LRG, so live reality game, played in season two, had an amazing experience, went in knowing a few faces, but for the most part didn't really know anyone, and yeah, made some great lifelong friends through that, and yeah, absolutely loved playing it. I mean, ORGs are great, stressful, but then like the LRG experience is just incredible, and yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it would be next level, but enough of the LRGs and the online stuff. Let's talk about US Survivor, and here we are, season 46, and I mean, a bit of a quiet episode, a tough one to podcast about for yourself, just coming on for the first time. But let's get some thoughts at season 46 overall and maybe US Survivor, because I think you sort of see it perhaps differently to the rest of the community.
I know, it's very controversial, but I think I'm one of the very few people that prefers US Survivor to Australian Survivor, even still to this day. I will say Australian Survivor has gotten better over the years, but for the most part, I'm not a huge fan of the casting choices in Australian Survivor. There's too many everyday Australians, too many people that are not really fans of the game and not great with strategy. It's just like the blind leading the blind. I will say this season has been better than most Australian Survivor seasons, but still, I mean, when you line them up side by side, there are so many more players in the US season, on a whole. And yeah, I just like that the season is just, it's short, it's sharp.
It's short, I'll tell you, it's short.
Yeah,
it's half the time, short. Probably.
I was going to say almost too short, verging on too short. But yeah, it's a very big contrast to the, you know, the 1.5, 2 hour long episodes of Australian Survivor three times a week. So
yeah, I mean, Australian Survivor's a lot. And what are we getting to? 24 episodes for the season, which is huge. Yeah. When you compare, US is usually around 13.
Yep.
But when you talk about casting, which is a huge contention point in the community, because some people, you know, we need more super fans on the Australian one. And, you know, I watched the American one, and we've spoken about it plenty of times on this podcast. To me, there's too many super fans. Like, too many people are trying to play, like, optimal Survivor, which generally becomes quite boring Survivor. That's where we see it. And especially this new era, there's so much of the same. Like, everything's identical. Mm-hmm. Sweat and Savvy, the three-tribe format. Like, to me, it's getting a little bit stale. Do you feel that somewhat it is, or you still stand by like it's going strong and we're going to continue doing this forever?
No, I definitely agree that the formats that they have had for the new generation of Survivor, so from season 41 onwards, is starting to get a bit stale with the three tribes of six. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of small tribes. I mean, I guess the only good thing is that there's nowhere to hide and you really have to start playing from day dot. So I do like that about the game. But I really did think that over, you know, the last few seasons that they would have changed things up a little bit. I mean, there have been only a few slight iterations to the, you know, some of the advantages that they have in the game. They've gotten rid of a few things like the knowledge is power advantage, which was rubbish.
They've bought some good moments.
You know, they've tweaked a few things. So for me, I still do find it exciting. On your comment with regards to too many super fans, I do agree that it's almost verging on that, but I feel like there are some that are super fans, but then also do have a personality to back it up. And I think as long as they can keep casting and, you know, ticking both of those boxes, super fans, but also people with personality, then, the show's in good hands, or at least, for me it is. I'm, you know, like happy with how, you know, like sort of US Survivor has been tracking, over the last few years. So yeah. I just wish that with the Australian one, they had a few more super fans in it and a few more people that were a bit more switched on. And yeah.
Yeah. I think, I guess the evolution of just like the average person coming to Australian Survivor, they're starting to be a bit more successful. Look at someone like Kirby, who's picked the game up really quickly and started to dominate. Like, I find that is a lot more fun to watch than someone who's, I guess, watched it their whole life, you know, died to be on the show and is, you know, half of them don't go that well anyway, because they try and do too many subtle things, optimal play, under the radar strategy, which is the main strategy nowadays, which, you know, it doesn't lend to great TV.
No.
But look, I like them both. I do think US Survivor, there's something about the way they shoot it, and it might be its accent as well in the confessionals. It's something that draws me back in. It could be just nostalgia. I don't know. But, yeah, I can enjoy both. I just think it'd be nice to just go back to two tribes for US just to mix it up completely. Like, I'm sick of the small tribes, and, you know, we go to Emerge, and then we have small votes there as well. So, look, it has its flaws, but we still love it. That's why we're here.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you think at season 46, just overall? We've had three episodes. Like, are you liking this cast? Any standouts for you? Like, where are you at with season 46?
Look, so far we are only three episodes in, and the one thing with these short episodes and still having it, well, starting with a cast of 18, is that for a good sort of like four or five episodes, you really don't get to know a majority of the cast. So that is one of the downsides to the shorter episodes, where I would say that half of the cast, I know very little to nothing about them. So that is one of the downsides to it. There are a few people in the cast that I am sort of warming to that I do quite like, and I really want to see them go deep, or I just want to see how they play the game. So, of course, the Anu tribe, they're the tribe that have been losing absolutely every challenge, so they're in the spotlight, so we're getting to see a lot of them on our screens. Personally, absolutely love Tiffany. She set herself up really well in that tribe, and really can't wait to see her go deep into the game. I don't see her having an issue making it to Merge, unless there potentially is some sort of tribe swap before Merge. But again, I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're just going to merge in the next, you know, couple of rounds, in the next sort of like 2 to 3 rounds potentially.
Yeah, usually around that 13 mark, I suppose, they have last season. There was a little tribe swap in 44, like with one person going. So hopefully, to me, I pray for that, because I think that does mix up the game enough.
Exactly, yeah, because they sort of, if there's no tribe swap, they go into Merge. You know, Yanu are really screwed from the outset, and then it'll be Nami's the orange tribe, and then Siga, the green tribe, that are just going head-to-head. And, yeah, the same story will play out that has played out, you know, over the last few seasons. So I always do like when they do a tribe swap pre-merge, because then it just, yeah, sort of complicates all of these relationships, and then it just, yeah, adds another sort of element and complexity to the game. So
yeah, I mean, you talk about the history of the new era, really. The smallest tribe generally at Merge sort of, you get the two big tribes going at each other, and the smallest tribe gets a jump on one of those sides. So I do think like the Yanu people might be safe for a while. And I guess, let's go into the Yanu people. Banu. Now, this is a story I'm loving. I'm loving this man. I'll just say that. He wants a million hearts. Tick one off from me. He can have mine. I'll tell you, he's a champion. I love him. What a sweetheart.
Get me a bucket. It was very sweet.
Oh, you don't like him?
Very corny.
Oh, no. Poor immigrant playing this game he loves, pouring his heart out on his sleeve. You don't like that?
No, so I do. I just thought that sentiment, I was just like, oh gosh, get me a market. Sometimes I have little sympathy. So I'm one of these people that when they have the love letters from home or the loved ones challenges, I just, you know, I want to fast forward through that. I just, yeah, it's all a little cringe for me. I'm just like, get back to the gameplay. I want to see that.
I get it now. I get how you voted me out of that game. You have no heart. You're a heartless man.
No, not at all. But no, I have warmed to Banu a bit. There have been a few times where I do agree with his tribe mates, so Tiffany, Kenzie and Q, where they're just like, he needs to know when to sort of, to shut off, to keep his mouth shut, not, you know, lay all of his cards out.
Yeah.
But I guess that's sort of the great thing about Survivor and getting people in that do not know the game and they're just being themselves. But yeah.
I just think as a character, this is like, to me, it's like my favorite type of character who's like the eccentric person out there, like the biggest TV personality who's, and just to see him try so hard and fail all the time. I think to me, it's a lot of fun. Like, at the end of the episode, when Jeff says, you don't have to go to tribal, the smile on the man's face, I almost cried, I swear.
Really heartwarming, yeah.
Oh, wasn't it? I'll tell you what. Everyone except for you, it seems, must love this man.
No. I do have a soft spot for him. I will say that. And look, I am glad, even though we know very little about Randon, who was medevaced, I am happy to see Banu get that sort of second chance in the game. I mean, Survivor does ultimately, at the end of the day, come down to a bit of luck at the same time. And, you know, he had luck in his favour. The gods that he was praying to, obviously, it all worked out. So he had his luck. And I feel like they were sort of building up to this throughout the entire episode. It'd be great to see him hopefully turn that around. I personally think that this moment will be a catalyst for Yanu to win their first challenge next episode. So hoping that the tribe of four that are left there can survive another few episodes and a few votes without having to go back to tribal council.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I do think this will galvanise the Yanus together. Look, on paper, the four people they have left in the game, they're quite strong at challenges. So, like, they should be going better than they are now that Jess is gone. And, I mean, we don't know about Jelinski, but just with Banu, I just think this whole episode was his, like, he's going home episode. That's how it felt. You get this emotional attachment to him. And now the fact that he gets saved, to me, it says this man might be in the game for a long time. Like, the audience is loving him.
Yeah.
It's sort of the editors have set us up to love him that much. Like, do you think this is going to turn his whole game around and he's going to be like a long-term player?
Well, so when I was watching this episode and then when I saw Jeff come into the Seeger camp and then I knew where, you know, what was happening there, he's not going to come to that camp and then say, you know, Randon, you're good to go ahead. Of course, they were going to pull him from the game. And then I thought, I compared Banu to Emily in the sense that Emily started off, this is last season, Emily from last season, where she started off the game on the wrong foot. She just came in a little too hard, you know, didn't create the connections that she needed to. Similarly to sort of to Banu, and then she sort of had her Hail Mary and that moment that sort of turned her game around. And then, I mean, look at what Emily did last season. I think that she was one of the greatest players of the season.
Yeah.
And even in the new era, I think that, she's such an interesting person to watch. And she had, like a complete 180 in her game. And I see that Banu could potentially do that. I don't think that he will be quite as strategic or as switched on as Emily was. But still, I think that, there is room for improvement and we could sort of see an edit similar to Emily's where, you know, you go from potentially not quite, you know, understanding him and getting him to then, you know, turning around completely and then loving him and then, you know, rooting for him in the end. So,
Absolutely. Like, you compare him to Emily. I compared him to Sugar back in Gabon, just crying all the time. But... A little bit different. When Sugar cried, we didn't care. I think we cared.
Yeah, no, exactly.
But I think, given this second chance and he's got this sort of like a coach figure in Q who's sort of, he looks like Q wants to help him throughout the game. You can sort of get this sense like he wants to take him under his wing. I'm going to teach you how to do things because you're going to be loyal to me. So if someone's come up to you and says, I'm Boss and Rob, you're going to be my Philip, how do you take that?
Oh my gosh, when I watched that, I was cringing. I was like, firstly, Q saying that to him, Banu's not even going to understand what that means. He will just see it as it's something endearing. Q's, you know, taking him under his wing and not that, oh, he's going to, you know, use and abuse him and use his vote essentially. Because at the end of the day, Philip was a loyal soldier and just did as Boston Rob did. Yeah. And we all know how that ended. Yeah, so I feel like that was a bit of a misstep on Q's part by being a little sort of condescending in that explanation. But again, Banu's at the bottom of the Yanu tribe, so anyone sort of extending an olive branch is good news for him.
No, absolutely. I just think the way he delivered the message, it was almost like this pep talk, like a halftime speech in a game of sport. And he's like really pumping up his ties. He's like, no, you can win this game. Like, you're still here. You're still playing. You know,
yeah.
I'm going to take you under my wing. You're going to be with me. And like, even the wackadoodles can win. That was the quote. And it's like,
yeah,
I genuinely think like these two could be bonded for quite a while just after this sort of adversity they've gone through as a tribe. And then if you can sort of keep Banu in line, especially at tribal council, I think there's longevity in this alliance.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see sort of how it plays out. I feel like because Yanu is the only tribe that has lost and who has gone to tribal council, it's really the only tribe that we sort of, you know, have an idea as to sort of the inner workings of the tribe, you know, who's working with who. I mean, as they say, you can't test an alliance until you go to tribal council and vote. So I think it's really interesting with sort of Kenzie and Tiffany on one side, Q and Banu on the other, and then of course Q and Tiffany working together in the middle. So I feel like Q and Tiffany are good, and it's of course Kenzie and Banu who are sort of a bit more vulnerable pre-merge, you know, if they are to lose. I still do think though that Banu is in probably the most trouble before merge if they are to lose again, but fingers crossed they don't.
Yeah, it would seem so. And I just want to throw like a strategy out to you. Like, Banu's seemingly the most honest man in the world. He can't keep a secret. He tells everyone everything. Can this be a strategy to weaponize? Can he become this guy who tells people a lot of things that are now not real, that are fake, that he now has this reputation as, yeah, he spills the beans. He's so honest. Can he use that and weaponize it against other people, do you think?
Oh, 100%. And I mean, it's happened in Survivor before. And I feel like, especially with, you know, Tiffany, Q, they're trying to sort of batten down into him that, you know, you need to start playing a little more strategically. You know, if he knows that he needs to start, you know, like, thinking before he speaks, even though, of course, you know, he wants to be himself, he wants to be as honest as possible. He does know deep down that, you know, he needs to, you know, play a little smarter to get ahead in the game. So I feel like that with their influence that, yeah, he could definitely use it to his advantage.
Yeah, I just feel like from an edit perspective, like we've seen Q give him a couple of pep talks, Ben's giving him a pep talk. I do think Banu can right his wrongs. He can become a better Survivor player, because I think what we're getting set up for, this guy who's come in, he's obviously a fan of the show, but maybe doesn't really understand the nuances of social strategy. He can evolve into like a decent enough Survivor player. That's sort of what I'm reading. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's what I'd like to see as well, I think.
No, definitely. Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there.
You mentioned a second ago, the small tribes and, you do a few votes and you get bonded. Do you think there's a bit of like a meta strategy, a bit of an intentional Matt Singh strategy perhaps, of needing to go to tribal council, especially before a swap or merge, especially in these small tribes of six, to find out who is with who, where the cracks are, who you can actually trust?
Oh, 100%. I feel like that there's definitely a benefit to going to tribal council, of course, provided that you have positioned yourself in the right way, that when you go there, that you're not having your torch snuffed.
Yeah.
Because yeah, these other tribes, Nami and Siga, who have not gone to tribal council at all, you know, imagine they go into merge. One of those tribes is potentially going to go into merge without having gone to tribal council at all. And they'll have absolutely no idea sort of where they sit. Even if, you know, someone is, you know, they're number one, they don't know that until they go to tribal council. You can say all of these things. You're my number one. I'll never vote for you. I'll always vote with you. We'll protect each other. But again, unless you're going to tribal council and you're putting that into practice, then you really don't know. And I mean, we've seen so many times that the tribe that goes into merge with the biggest numbers, they sort of, they're targeted by the other two smaller tribes, or they sometimes implode and then turn on each other because they feel as if, oh, we've still got six of our members, so we're going to be okay. I don't like this person from my original tribe, so I just want to get rid of them. Yeah. So I feel like, yeah, there's definitely a benefit to going to tribal once or twice. I'd say no more than twice because, you don't want to be losing too many people and you want to go into merge with some numbers and some connections. Yeah,
I've always thought if it's two tribes and, you've got bigger numbers, it's easy to not throw challenges but to not win them and really solidify a group. Whereas when you have only six people tribes, it's a bit harder to thread the needle of, like, we need to lose, but – you know, I'm in a precarious spot if there's only six of us. So I think it's a fine balance, but I do think it is worthwhile to lose a few early on just to build, like, that solidity. But like you said, it can easily backfire. Next. Okay. Do you want to get on to, is it a hot topic of the night, the medevac? Like, probably not. We didn't see a whole lot of it, but what medevacs, Brandon, talk to me about them.
Yeah, gosh, it's a really interesting one. So Randon's obviously someone that over the first few episodes we've really not gotten to see much of. I feel like he's maybe had, a confession or two over the first few episodes. So I feel like we've just not really built that sort of connection. We've not really warmed to him. Not to say that we don't like him, but we don't really know much about him. So it's really hard to be like, oh, we're really sad to see him go. Of course, it's sad to see anyone go, someone that, has waited their entire life for this sort of opportunity and then to have something that's sort of out of their control pull them from the game. It's really sad. Personally for me, I didn't really have that connection to him. So I can't say that I'm really sad to see him go. Whereas if it was someone from the Yanu tribe, I'd probably be a little more upset with it because I feel like over the over the first three episodes, they're the tribe that have had the spotlight on them. So I feel like I know the most about that tribe because they're going to tribal council. So, half of the episode is devoted to them. So
totally. I mean, you've just proven yourself to be heartless again, but I do understand. it's hard.
Like, it's out.
Any medevac, especially early on, I feel so sorry for them. Like you said, they've gone through months of casting and giving up their lives for this journey, which we've all wanted to go on, and to be ruled out for something out of your control, it's heartbreaking to watch. And I really felt for him. And like you said, I barely even know the guy, but I guess as fans, we understand the journey it takes just to get out there. And to have that taken away from you, it's really sorry to see. I also think, like, Randon was a victim of the tribe's success, and even in this episode, they weren't going to tribal council, so we didn't even get to see any of them. And, like, it must be so hard for him to watch back to say, like, oh, I played for a week, I did all these things, but you don't get to see any of it because your tribe was so successful that we don't even know. And even when you leave the game in that episode, your tribe still won. So we got like one scene with the Nami people. It's horrible. Yeah. It's such a bad way to go.
Yeah, and that's the one thing where with the US episodes being so short in length that you really don't get to know much about a lot of these players. So with, a lot of the people that are out pre-merge, of course, not everyone can be a big character. Not everyone gets that screen time. So you'll have, a handful of players that you know very little about, and they've been on your screens for, three, four, 5 weeks, and you still know, you don't know them from a bar of soap. So it's, really sad that we don't really get to know a little bit more about each of them.
But, I mean, you'd know it from your LRG game in Canberra. Like, there's players there who you met and you would have seen things they were doing perhaps that didn't make the final cut, and then, they would just have no edit almost.
Yeah, of course, because the thing is, not everyone can be in a starring role. There are some people that are just, bigger personalities. They're sort of, their story is centered more around the action, or the action's centered more around their story. So then you end up getting people that have that sort of purple edit because their game doesn't really fit into the greater story. So it is really sad when that does happen because a lot of it does get missed, especially if you've got 48 hours of footage and you're condensing that down into 5-6 hours, however long it is. A lot of it will be missed.
No, that's it. And it is a shame because I do feel like the Rand and Venus partnership, I was getting behind it. I actually, you know, started off, I love Tevin, but to see this sort of underdog alliance come together with those two, they had the Beware advantage. It was unsure where it was going to go, and it could have been a lot of fun, but now it's sort of, I guess, Venus left on the outs perhaps because I don't know who else she has in that tribe. So it's hard to say. Do you have a sense of where that tribe's going to go next?
Yeah, it is really hard to say. I mean, it would have been really exciting, as you said, to see where sort of Ranton and Venus would have gone with that Beware advantage and being, you know, only two of six. Like you, I was rooting for them. I wanted to see them do well, and, you know, sort of overthrow the, you know, the popular people or the, you know, the people that were seemingly in power. I really do hope that, and I feel like Venus is getting a sort of a slightly positive edit. So I feel like there is potential for her to turn things around and turn things into her favor. So I don't think all is lost with her. So I'm really hoping that she's able to turn that around and this isn't too much of a roadblock for her.
Yeah, it's interesting because after the first episode, I'm like, oh, I don't like Venus. But then after the second episode, I'm like, oh, I really like her. She's the underdog. Yeah. Randon teamed up with her. I'm like, yes, these are the people I want to see. But then there's Tevin, who is instantly likable. I don't know how you feel, but as soon as he hit the screen, because, I mean, he had that opening monologue, which was, you know, chilling almost. It was so good. I loved him from the start. I loved the way he talks. But, yeah, he sort of seems to be the power of the tribe. So I'm sort of fighting, who do I actually want to win here, Venus or Tevin? But hopefully they can just team up and get someone else out. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I completely agree because pre-season, watching, you know, like Tevin's like pre-season interviews because I watch all of those. Yeah. What wasn't someone that I really warmed to too much, but then in the season really have really enjoyed him so far. And he's set himself up in a great position. I quite actually like the Nami tribe. I feel like there's a few big personalities in there and a few potential great game players. So yeah, hopefully a few of them can go deep into the game.
Yeah. Yeah. That will be interesting to see. Cause I do think, yeah, they've lost Rand, and I just feel like, not that he was the glue holding everything together because he wasn't, but I just feel like this might be the start of the downfall next week. I think Yanu will come stronger at the challenge, and I think Nami's going to go back. But we'll go through that when we do predictions. Let's go along to the journey. Now, what do you think of the just overall as the journeys as a whole? Do we like these journeys? Like, I'm not sure that I do. I don't think they add a whole lot to the game. Where do you sit on the journeys?
Yeah, I sort of sit on the fence with this too because I guess this is really in this, you know, like our new era of Survivor, it's the only way in which really there's only sort of any sort of cross tribe pollination or cross tribe, you know, sort of communication or connection. So I do like it for that aspect because then, you know, you will have these individuals from each tribe that will meet up and then, you know, sort of form bonds. And then, you know, that sometimes can come into play later in the game. So I guess I like it for that aspect because it means the game isn't as stale. I guess once they do get there though, and the fact that over the last six seasons, the actual journey hasn't changed all that much. You've got to risk your vote. You could win a vote, lose a vote. It's not really anything that's too significant.
So, groundbreaking. That's the thing. You say cross-tribal, you know, pollination, which is fine. Like, they're chatting to each other and, you know, we see Banu give up a lot of information, but it's never really wielded much of, like, working together later in the game. I think, was it 41, Shane and Liana was probably the only one really that have actually gone to a journey and worked together. Yeah. I think it's fun to see these characters on the screen together, but, like, I don't think it adds a whole lot. And then we do, like, another challenge, which is... Yeah, it was a little bit grip, like tense because I'm like, oh, is he going to lose his vote? Is he going to get the advantage? And I was invested in Banu, but like, I just feel like they could do more with the time they have, I suppose. But again, in this episode, without a vote, they had to fill the time in somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess what I'd write, like, instead of them actually doing this journey every episode, what would be great is if they just had the immunity challenge, but then we had more time to actually get to know each of the characters. We got a few extra confessionals. We got a bit more camp life. Whereas I feel like with Australian Survivor, we get too much of that. With US, we're not getting enough, and I want a little more.
Yeah, we're definitely, with this 90-minute episodes now, we are getting more camp life. Like, we see Hunter make the bed. And that was fun. And we get his backstory. And, I mean, just from what I saw just there, let's stick with Hunter for 2 seconds. He's playing a good game. He's seemingly this outdoorsman who's just, you know, not that smart or whatever, but he's just massive Survivor fan. He's got all these puzzles. So, yeah, he's doing some good stuff. I think there's definitely a lot more camp life nowadays than there used to be. Mm-hmm. Are you saying you want more camp life? Is that what you want?
Yeah, I think maybe because I am watching Australian Survivor at the same time, and then the complete polar opposites. And with the Australian Survivor, we're getting double the amount of camp life time. And I feel like I know so much about most of the cast in Australian Survivor that with US Survivor, there's still a few that I know very little about. Yeah. I'm just greedy. I'd like a little bit more, and I feel like, you know, we could definitely take away the journey time and then, devote that to some more camp life. Mm. But I agree, Hunter is definitely someone that I'm rooting for. I want to see him do well. I think he's started off the game really well. He's positioned himself quite well. He's an asset to the tribe, and no one sort of pegging him as a threat to their game. Of course, he's strong, but they don't see him as a sort of strategic strategic player. So if he can keep that on the down low, then I think he could do well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a final thing on the journeys, I think early on in the season they probably don't need them, so we can build that character base and so we get to know them. And maybe later on they can do them. But, Hunter Buckles winner pick, so that's something to note. He's excited. He got D last season. He's on Ferris for Australian Survivor. So he's like, I've got three in a row. I said, you only won one at the moment, mate. So
yeah, I was going to say, don't count your eggs before they hatch.
He's very excited. He's very excited. But just with Banu at the journey, right? So he goes there. He decides to, as his tribe sort of thought it might happen, spill everything about everyone. How does this work for Banu at the swap? Do people from the other tribes now want to work with him because he's told them all this information, or is it, I can't work with him because he'll tell everyone our information? Where do you think that's going to go?
Look, I feel like, again, it's a double-edged sword there. I feel like, look, when push comes to shove, I feel like the other tribes are more likely to want to work with Banu because he does sort of portray this, you know, really honest, caring, loyal player that, of course, everyone wants in an ally, and he has painted his tribe mates as being very close-knit, and especially Kenzie as being sort of the instigator behind it all. So, the alarm bells are sort of, pointing towards them. So I see him being someone that others would prefer to work with over the other three from his tribe. The only thing, though, is that even though, of course, he's gone back and he's told his tribe that, no, I didn't really tell them much, it will eventually come out, and I feel like that could potentially backfire on him.
Oh, all it takes is one conversation from his tribe with the new tribe, and he's done. But I guess given the information he's given away, they'll probably want to break up that threesome. They're going to target Kenzie. It seems like they made a point in the edit to really point out that she's the mastermind. Like, he said it and they said it back, and so I really think that's going to come back to bite Kenzie later on. And then Q and Tiffany are so tight, like, they're going to look to break that up as well. So maybe he'll be the one spared at the start if they start going down, picking off Janus. Like, it's hard to say. But it's going to be interesting, I guess, to see where just that one conversation with Ben and Liz, how far that sort of spreads and Chinese whispers happens and stories change. So it's going to be a bit of fun to watch, I think.
And I mean, even in the episode, we saw both Liz and Ben go back to their tribes, and then they spilt everything to their tribes. They were like, we didn't have to give any information about our tribe, but Banu has given us, you know, everything top to bottom. We've got the backstory on everyone. So, that plays into everyone else's games. And I feel like, that's a disadvantage to Yanu, as he's, revealed sort of everything about the inner workings of the tribe.
Is that the right strategy, to come back and tell your whole tribe everything that Banu said? Or is it, do you want to keep it to some people, or do you want to use it to, like, get trust with everyone? Like, is that what you would do, you think?
Look, personally, I would probably have, like, sort of, I'd provide some information that Banu has provided to me and provide that to the entire tribe. But then there'd be some bits of information that I'd probably hold back from some people in the tribe that I'm not as close with, that I don't trust as much, and then use that to build further trust with the few that I'm working with. So, look, I'd probably, it'd be in layers. Some people would get the full story, some would get part of the story.
So you would know when to hold them and when to fold them, perhaps?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we'll see.
Right. Okay, we're going to start a segment we like to call
Previously on Survivor.
And let's see what we said last week. Can this Yanu tribe win a challenge? I do think with Jess gone, they're probably more likely. Banu and Q are quite strong, as is Tiffany, really. So it's quite a strong tribe in a four-man challenge. So I'm thinking the Nami tribe goes to tribal camp. And, yeah, the Venus versus Tevin sort of war. Who wins the war? They might have an idol. I'm going to go with the underdogs, and they get out Soda. Soda will be gone next week. So, yeah, like, I assume that the Yanu tribe would be stronger just based on the people they had left, and, you know, that Nami might lose, but it wasn't to be. And who can predict a medivac? Like, how am I supposed to do that? Come on.
Exactly, yeah. Impossible to predict.
Yeah, I mean, Soda's still perhaps on the outs. I don't know. It's hard to say. We'll see where it goes. But let's see what Buckles had to say.
Nah, I'm going to stick with Liz. Liz goes home. This telling everyone that she's the best does not work for her.
Yeah, okay, same thing. Again, we can't predict the medivac. Liz seemingly is not in danger, I would say. Michael, thoughts?
Yeah, no, so I think that that's a pretty hot take with Liz on the Nami tribe. Personally, I feel like she's getting a slightly negative edit. She's not someone that, you know, her tribe are warming to, well, in the sense that, you know, some of the things that she's saying is rubbing them the wrong way. It's definitely rubbing me the wrong way as a viewer. So I wouldn't be too surprised if she's someone that does, you know, go in the next couple of episodes, especially if Nami do start losing challenges, as I don't see her really bringing much tribe strength to the tribe. Yeah, so she's someone that I'd be happy to see go.
Yeah, that's interesting because I listened to an exit interview with Randon today and he was saying Liz is playing like a super smart, intelligent game, which we haven't seen much. I guess we haven't seen much of Nami overall, so it's hard to judge. Yeah. But from what his view was, like she was doing things that were smart, I guess. Like he didn't really give examples, but yeah, he rated her. So that's interesting to see where she fits in. She hasn't really said who she's aligning with or anything. So like we sort of see the two sides and like Tevin and Soda and then Venus and Randon, Hunter sort of with Tevin, but we don't really get Liz's perspective. So not sure where she is at the moment.
Yeah, and maybe she's just playing smart and she's just sort of sitting back and she's realised that these two sides are, you know, are going against each other. So why, you know, put my foot in it and get myself in any trouble when at the moment I'm in a good and safe position?
Yeah, that's smart gameplay, smart gameplay. So
I'd be doing the same thing if I'd recognise that two other people were, you know, warring with each other.
Yeah, you just want to fuel the fire and keep that going as long as you can.
Exactly, so. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, did you hear what so-and-so said about you?
Exactly. And then you don't pick either of them off. You keep them both in the game and then, you know,
oh, exactly, because they'll always be after each other and not you.
You've done this before, Michael. All right, let's see what's going to happen next week on...
Next time on Survivor.
All right, Michael, next week's predictions. What do you got for me?
Okay, well, hot take, but I think that next week will be the first week where Yanu actually win an immunity challenge and they're spared from tribal council and not because of a medivac. So I can see this week's episode sort of fueling their fire and I feel like that they're going to, be one of the first two tribes to finish. And Sega is also quite a strong tribe, so I really personally see Nami losing and going to tribal council. As you'd sort of touched on earlier, Randon was sort of like, well, one, he was strong for the tribe and potentially was the glue for the tribe. So I can see them sort of falling apart after this and, losing the challenge and going to tribal council.
And who's going home?
Oh, look, potentially Soda. Okay. I don't see her as someone that is bringing strength to the tribe. She is someone that is quite a big personality. So, you know, people can clash with her. So personally, I want to see Liz go, but it's more likely to be Soda or Venus, but I'm hoping it's Soda.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I see something similar. I think, Yanu's bonded. They're going to be strong. They actually, on paper, have quite a good challenge team. So they'll be fine. I think Sega's not going to tribal before the merge, hot take, because in this episode, Jem gets the beware advantage and she reads out the next section, which says, if you're Tribe doesn't go to tribal council before the merge, there'll be further instructions, which we did not get from the other two tribes. So exactly. To me, that's a little Easter egg saying they're not going to go to tribal. So they're safe. For me, it's NAMI as well. And look, I'd love to see Venus win this war, but I don't know if she has any numbers. It's definitely Tevin. I think Hunter's locked in with Tevin with his Andy Griffith alliance. Soda seemingly in that same one. So there's three, like that's the majority. I don't know how Venus would pull a number. Would Liz even go to that side? You say she's playing a smart game, just not doing anything wrong, or just she'll side with the numbers too. So to me, it's sort of has to be Venus. So that's going to be my prediction. We're going to go with Venus.
Really hoping it's not. I'm really hoping you're wrong here.
From what I've seen, just based on if we're looking at reading the edit, I would think that Venus is staying, but yeah. I just don't know how that happens, just given the numbers we have.
And yeah,
we
know of the people. She's in a tricky spot.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. All right, let's go to the eulogies. And this is where we rate Randon as a character, rate him as a player, any memorable moments, and will he return?
Look, for personality, not to say that Randon didn't have a personality, but he was on a tribe where there were some really big personalities with, big egos. So I feel like in his tribe, NAMI, he took sort of a backseat. So he wasn't really the focal point on his tribe. I do feel like he was quite a switched on player and, he could have done quite well in the game. I mean, as we know, he had the Boer advantage, so he could have done something great with that. He had that sort of connection to Venus. So I really was looking forward to seeing where that went. As for him returning, I'm not too sure. I mean, we've had quite a number of people medevaced from the game before and only a very small portion come back or are invited back for a following season. I mean, I've got nothing against seeing him back for another season, but I would say that, look, there probably are some other characters that have been medevaced in the past that have a greater chance of coming back.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Look, at the end of the day, he was the third boot who got medevaced. He was barely on our screens because that tribe never lost. Like, it's hard to see him coming back. Like, why would he be asked? As a character, yeah, similar to that. Like, we barely saw him. It's hard to really judge him. But I can judge him on his gameplay because we saw some of that. He found the advantage. And instead of sort of going with the top dog in Tevin, who he was sort of aligned with at the very start, he decided to make a number for himself and pick up Venus, which I thought was a smart move. Yes. Try and unite the people at the bottom, even though it was sort of him and Venus on the bottom. So at least you're not working against each other. All you need is one more person and all of a sudden you're a three out of six and there's avenues forward. So I think as a game player, he's actually all right. Again, in his exit interview, some of the things he was doing, he was actually quite smart from what I could tell. He set up Soda with the Parvati line just see if it would come back to him. So when he called Venus Light Parvati or whatever it was, that was a test. We didn't know that when we watched it, but I've heard it since. And he said, I wonder if that'll come back to me. And it came back within 5 minutes, he said. And
from there,
he didn't trust Soda. So to set up that that test and to actually get the payoff from it, it shows some chops for the game. So I think he was actually pretty good. We might have missed out on like a good character, but unfortunately when you get medivacs, like there's nothing you can do. A bulging disc is not something to be taken lightly. And yeah, it was just an untimely demise.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it is really unfortunate, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. So yeah.
That's it. Nothing you can do. All right, let's move on to Buckle's Buff of the Episode, where we rate the best player from the episode. Who are you going with, Michael?
Look, for this episode, look, I'm going to stick with my girl Tiffany, purely because Yanu have gone to tribal back-to-back, and she has set herself up in the best possible position in the Yanu tribe. She is sort of the focal point. She's not even being considered as someone that anyone wants to vote out. Everyone wants to work with her. She's Q's number one. She's Kenzie's number one. She's really switched on. She's got the Beware advantage. So she's got a lot of things going for her. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how her game unfolds in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree, but I will.
I was going to say, who's yours?
I went with Q. I just thought the way he bought, like, it's obviously the three of them. Well, it's Q and Tiffany with Kenzie, and then there's Banu. The way he bought in Banu to be a number for him, I guess to, well, is on the bottom. So any number on the bottom is a number up for grabs. And Q seemingly is the only one who's actively trying to pursue Banu. If Banu, for some reason, has an idol, Q will be safe, whereas the other two won't be. So there's that. I just think I just really liked the personality I saw in Q this episode. I like the way he spoke to people. I like the way he's trying to lift people up, mainly Banu, but in general his whole tribe. He's got a really good like calm composure about him. There's something I really like about Q. I don't think he's going to win the game or anything, but I just think in this episode he was, for me, the standout, and that's why he gets my buff.
He definitely had a great episode, so I agree with you there.
Yeah, which takes us to the buff leaderboard, which currently looks like Maria on one, Kenzie on one, and Q and Tiffany both tied on two after 3 weeks. So, yeah, it's obviously early days, but Q and Tiffany, multiple buffs already.
Yeah. And I guess that's what happens when your tribe keeps going back to tribal council. When your back's against the wall, that's when you sort of have the opportunity to make those moves, build those connections, and get your game going.
Yeah, well, that's it. And you know, they're bonded, and I only give buff to people that go to tribal council, so it's hard for anyone else to get it. So that's why they're getting all these points early on, and if they can make a big enough lead, they can win the buff. So it's exciting times ahead. All right, before we wrap it up, Michael, do you have a winner prediction for this season? What do you got for me?
Look, we're only a few episodes in. There are a few players that are showing some promise that they look like they could go quite deep into the game. So for me, I would say that from the Yanu tribe, Tiffany, you can't go past her, although I feel like she's going to have a tough time coming into merge, especially if she's only going in with, one or two tribe mates. I will also say that I think that Hunter is setting himself up really well. He's playing a really good game so far. And then I'm going to go with Jem from the Seeger tribe. She's just found the Beware advantage. I feel like she's decently placed there, even though she's not in that sort of central pivotal position like Maria and Charlie are. I feel like she's someone that, has a good grasp on the game, and I could see her doing quite well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so Buckles has gone Hunter. Before the season, mine was Hunter based on nothing. I just looked at photos and picked Hunter. But since I've watched, from episode one, I've picked Ben. I think Ben, I just like him. I don't know if he can win, but there's something about him. I really enjoy him on the screen. He rocks, and everything rocks or doesn't rock. So that's fun.
Yeah.
he's just a good character. I think he's just got this really affable personality, which could take him a long way. And just being so likable is a huge asset in the game. So I think Ben's a chance.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there.
All right, Michael, is there anything you want to plug or let the people listening know about yourself or what you're doing or Survivor-related things? Melbourne viewing party, perhaps?
Yes, there is actually one in Melbourne. So there's one for the finale next Tuesday night, 19th of March. It's at the Lost Boys Bar in Fitzroy, so not too far from me. So if I can catch up on Australian Survivor, I definitely would love to go. It's always good to see a few familiar faces in the community. There's usually a few ex-Survivor alumni there. So, yeah, it's always a fun night. So, yeah, would love to get along. And if you're in Melbourne, definitely encourage you to head along to it.
Yeah, ex-Survivor alumni, also some current ones, which I shouldn't be, but they're there. It's fine.
Ah, very nice.
They're always lurking. If you're in Sydney, the Agincourt Hotel near Central Station, I think it's from 6 or 7. Get along there. I'll probably be there. It's always a good night. It's a great atmosphere watching a finale. It's like going to a sporting event. The crowd goes wild at every moment. It's a lot of fun. If you don't know anyone, still come along, have a beer. You'll meet some people. Just see me in the room. Come say good day. Happy to have a chat about Survivor or other things. We don't have to talk about Survivor all the time, but we like to. Buckles is in Brisbane. I think it's at the Transcontinental Hotel. He's up there spruiking all that. So say good day to him. Tallest guy in the room. That's how you know it's him. Nothing else to add, Michael. If you haven't listened to our Australian Survivor penultimate podcast of the season with Leah Jacobson, that was a good one. That came out Friday morning. Get along with that before you watch the rest of the season from Sunday. And next week's guest for Australian Survivor, Michelle Pierce-Denevan of the Australian Survivor Facebook fan page. She's the queen of that, 30,000 members or something ridiculous. So Michelle's coming on to discuss the last three episodes of Australian Survivor, Titans vs. Rebels.
Looking forward to it. Should be a good one.
Yeah, it should be unreal. It's been a great season. Hopefully we get a good winner out of it. I mean, really, I would say 4 out of 5 would be good winners. Yeah. But, you know, I love Ray as well, so.
Yeah.
Should be good. All right, guys. Catch us on Facebook at Survivor Buffs, Blindsides and Banter, on Instagram at Survivor_3BS, on Twitter at Survivor3BS, and on TikTok, which has taken off lately. We've got a lot of videos coming out at Buffs, Blindsides and Banter. Pretty much like new videos every couple of days at the moment. We did a lot of filming about a month ago, and they're all starting to come out. Some games, some hot takes, some blind ranking stuff. It's a lot of fun. Just get involved. And, yeah, I've been Mac. This has been Michael. And, US Survivor 46 is rolling on, and we're enjoying it. So thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. Anytime.
Is this Survivor? Are you listening to Survivor? Guys, I think this is Survivor. Dude, you must really like Survivor.